Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The 4th of July usually means the start of vacation season, and whether you're headed to the mountains, the beach, the lake, the big city, or just staying home, a good book can make a journey or a lazy afternoon so much better. And who better to offer us a great suggestion for a summertime read than Studio Tulsa's book reviewer, Nancy Pearl. Former Tulsa librarian is the author of the Book Lust and Book Crush series of books on recommended reading and the editor of Amazon's Nancy Pearl's Book Lust Rediscovery series of reprints, and also the author of a new forthcoming novel, George and Lizzie, a novel which will be due out in September. She joins us to offer some great summertime recommended reading. Nancy Pearl, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. It's always a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Rich. It's great to be with you again.
This is summer reading time, and I know you have a great list of books, some really interesting stories behind some of these books as well. What's first on your list?
The first is a real page-turner, just a great thriller by a writer who we haven't seen hide nor hair of for about a decade, and lo and behold, Peter Blauner comes out with a new thriller called Proving Ground, and it's about one character I believe is going to be the woman policeman who's featured in the book. I think is going to be a continuing character, and she's very interesting, but I just loved the young man who was the other main character, a guy who rebelled against his father in a very interesting way. His nickname is Natty Dread, Nathaniel Dresden. His father is one of the major civil rights lawyers of his time. And to really protest against his father, to kind of rebel against his father for no particular reason except it was his father, Natty joins the military and serves several tours of duty in Afghanistan and Iraq. And he comes home, you know, with all of that war guilt and exhaustion. And his father, shortly after he comes back to New York, his father is murdered. And there are many people out there who had a lot of reasons to dislike his father, including Natty. And the policewoman who's investigating the case, a woman named Lourdes Robley, is, you know, they have an interesting dynamic, Natty and Lord, as they try to figure out what happened to Natty's father. This is it's perfect for escaping anything in your life that you don't want to think about for a while. I just thought it was wonderfully fast moving.
Yeah. Do we know why he hasn't written anything in the last decade
anything? I have not found out anything. Nobody has said why he hasn't. And you know, I think with writers, there's lots of different reasons. I mean, it could be he wasn't writing the kind of books publishers were looking for during that period. Although that's hard to believe because thrillers are just really, you need them all the time.
They don't go out of style, do they?
Right.
Well, the name of the book is Peter Blauner's Proving Ground. Now, the next book also has an interesting backstory. This is Jamie Harrison, who is the daughter, I believe,
yes,
of Jim Harrison.
Yes, and Jamie Harrison was brought up in Livingston, Montana, and she wrote a series of mysteries that I just loved, again, many years ago, long out of print. The first one is called The Edge of the Crazies. And it's the crazy mountains that are the backdrop of Livingston, Montana. And it is set in, those mysteries are set there in Livingston, although she calls it Blue Deer, Montana in those books. And I'm dying for a publisher to reissue those mysteries because they're so good. But finally, she has brought out a new book, a new novel called The Widow Nash. And it's being touted as a feminist Western. I kind of like that way of describing it, but it's really much more than that. It's set in the early years of the 20th century, around 1904, and it's about a young woman, Dulcie, who is trying to escape her life. Her father has died, and her ex-fiancé, who has a very violent streak, is trying to find a large sum of money that her father has hidden or lost. No one knows where it is, and her ex-fiancé is bound and determined to get it, and bound and determined to get Dulcie back. And to escape all of that, she is on a train taking her father back from Seattle to New York to be buried, and she jumps off the train in Livingston, Montana, and sets herself up as a young widow, the Widow Nash, in an attempt to disappear and make a new life for herself. This is another book I just loved. I found the characters so interesting, and that sense of, in the West, that's a place to make a new life. We've always sort of heard that about, I mean, that's been a continuing theme in novels about the West. And she's just a great character, and that whole question that sort of dogs you throughout the book, or the couple of questions, will the money be found, and will she be found out? Will she be tracked down by this really awful man to whom she was once engaged?
And Livingston, Montana, seems to be, it's one of those towns with the high per capita of great writers. Tom McGuane, Jim Harrison, who just passed away, and then Now Jamie Harrison.
Yes.
So what is it about that particular place?
I think it's the water, don't you?
Yeah, I don't know, but it's interesting. They all write about that place,
I know,
too.
I know. I think
whether fictionally or actually using the town name.
Yeah, and you know, she's very, even in those books, the Blue Deer books, the mysteries set there. I had a friend who was born and raised in Livingston, Montana, and he said when he read those mysteries, he knew those streets that she was writing about. I mean, it's that true to the way the town was and is. I mean, I think it's partly really the isolation of it. I think it's partly the beauty of it. I think it's, you know, hard to be in a place that in which the setting is so remarkable and that, you know, Montana sky is just amazing. I think that would be a place where you're just inspired.
Well, the name of the book is The Widow Nash by Jamie Harrison. What's next?
Well, next is a novel that I always feel I have to introduce this novel when I talk about it by saying that I don't just love this novel because I'm from Detroit. It's a novel called August Snow by Stephen Mack Jones. It's the first novel. I picked it up originally not knowing that it was set in Detroit, not knowing anything about it. I picked it up because I was intrigued by the title. Now, everybody else will probably, you know, say, oh, that must be the character's name. But when I read it, when I looked at the title, I thought, no, in August, that's weird, and picked up the book, you know, how little I knew then. But it's set in really contemporary Detroit. The main character is a former Detroit policeman. He was fired from his job basically for whistleblowing because he was the cause of the mayor of Detroit being sent to prison for fiscal malfeasance. And if you know anything about Detroit, one of the former mayors of Detroit is indeed in prison for malfeasance of one sort or another. So it has that kind of contemporary take on Detroit. But the main character, August Snow, after he gets fired from the police department, he sues them and wins a large sum of money. And he goes away for a couple of years, but then he comes back to Detroit and moves into the house where he grew up, and then starts buying other houses on the neck near his house on the same street and rehabbing them, trying in his own way to bring Detroit back. And then he's asked by a very wealthy woman living in one of the eastern Detroit suburbs, one of the Grosse Pointes, to look into some things that are happening at the bank that her family owns. And this sets him off on this great, again, page-turning thriller. So I was so taken with this book that in the middle of it, when he started describing his neighborhood and other neighborhoods in Detroit, and I haven't lived in Detroit, you know, for 40, well, I'm almost 50 years, I guess. When I got to those things where he's describing certain neighborhoods, I actually put the book down and went and looked on Zillow on the computer to see how much houses cost there. And it really kind of went through my head, wouldn't it be fun to be an urban pioneer, move back to Detroit?
Right, right. You know, that's an interesting thing. Although it's very difficult now. We just had somebody from Detroit on about a year ago, and they were talking about how, you know, banks won't lend money. It's a cash mortgage business.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so can I read you a little quote from the book just to get a sense of what a good writer Stephen Mack Jones is? So here it is. To the right off of westbound Jefferson Avenue, there were still neighborhoods that served as the gateway to hell, where black children cowered in the corners of abandoned houses, reading books stolen from school libraries by the last light of day, places where the devil was fed his daily dinner by a state that hated its largest city and a country that unctuously pitied those who lived there.
Hmm.
Now, that's great. Yeah. That's a great paragraph.
Spoken by somebody who obviously still loves the city.
I do. It was a wonderful place to grow up.
That's August Snow by Stephen Mack Jones. The next book you have is a interesting spy story, Defectors by Joseph Cannon.
Yes, and you know, Rich, from all the years that we've been talking, that I'm a sucker for spy novels. And this is a very good one. Joe Cannon is somebody, you know, he's kind of a go-to spy novelist for me. And this one, Defectors, I think is one of his best. His first novel was called, his first spy thriller was called Los Alamos, which is set in 1945 and mixes real people with invented characters. This one is set in 1951, and again, he has real people, the Cambridge spies, for example, Philby, Burgess, and MacLean, as well as invented characters. And one of the characters that he's invented is this guy who was high up in the CIA and defected to Russia. And after several years there, he gets permission from the government to write a memoir. And he starts writing it, but then realizes he needs somebody with a kind of objective eye to look at the memoir. And so he invites his brother, who's a New York publisher, to come to Russia and help him with the memoir. And without giving anything away, I think that it's safe to say that neither of these brothers is who they first appear to be.
Hmm. So it sounds like it's a lot of twists and turns in this particular book.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's one of those books where you don't know until the last page, and it's very tempting in the middle of the book to turn to the last page because you want to find out what happens. But I would say try not to do that.
My guest today is Nancy Pearl, our longtime book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa, with some summertime books, some great reads for getting through a long, hot summer here in Oklahoma. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Up next is this is a nonfiction book, Stephen Kinzer's new book, The True Flag, Theodore Roosevelt, Mark Twain, and the Birth of American Empire.
So Stephen Kinzer is one of my favorite historians, and he's one of those historians who writes very accessible books. And this is one of his most interesting. It's, I think, especially interesting in the current political season. And it's about Theodore Roosevelt. It's about the imperialism that Theodore Roosevelt espoused. And it talks about not only the Boer War, which the United States didn't have much to do with, but it focuses mainly on the Philippines and the treatment of the American government of the Philippines. And it's so relevant and so interesting that I think that it would be fair to say this is a page turner as well.
Now, Theodore Roosevelt, if you're talking about the birth of American empire, how does Mark Twain figure into
this?
Well,
Mark Twain was very anti-imperialism.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Twain was not a fan of Theodore Roosevelt, and he was not a fan of what was happening, the direction that the United States was going at that period.
And so is it about the two opposing viewpoints? Or, I mean, because obviously Roosevelt's viewpoint very much prevailed.
He did, and we're still seeing the results of that today. I guess Kinzer would argue, and I would agree with him. It really illuminates a period of history that a lot of Americans, including me, know very little about.
And we don't understand it very well. I mean, because most of us living in the 20th century have known America as it is in the 20th century, not as it was.
Right, and how it became what it is. And, you know, this was a period, really, the height of the British Empire and America had, under McKinley, under Roosevelt, had great imperial desires. And everything that we did, the way the United States treated Aquino of the Philippines, for example, you know, who was so instrumental in defeating the Spanish, was to really say, yeah, you helped us, but so what? We're not going to do anything for you guys. It's just an interesting, it's a fascinating period.
Yeah. The name of the book is The True Flag, Theodore Roosevelt, Mark Twain, and the Birth of American Empire by Stephen Kinzer. Next book up is by Laura McBride, Round Midnight.
Yeah, so this is just a really good, solid novel that I quite enjoyed. It's set in, begins in Las Vegas in the 1950s. And, of course, this is another book where we know, you know, we know Las Vegas now with, you know, the many casinos and the strip and, you know, the entertainers and all of that. But this book opens at the beginning of Las Vegas, when those casinos were just beginning, were just developing.
Hotels in the desert, right?
Yes, exactly. Uh-huh. And the main character of the first section of the book is a young woman who, along with her husband, builds one of the most successful small casinos. And the book then goes on to follow the next couple of generations of this family. And this will be a wonderful book for book groups. There's a lot in it, you know, stuff that, again, that we don't think about in terms of Las Vegas. But Nevada at that time in the 50s was an extremely segregated state. And so you could have all of these black entertainers, but they couldn't eat. They had no place to go. No restaurants would serve them. Certainly they couldn't hobnob with the rest of the people coming to the casinos. And that's all brought up in the book. So there's lots to talk about.
The next book is a really interesting story about, this might have a lot of common with some of the communities in Western Oklahoma, Lions, L-I-O-N-S, by Bonnie Nadsom.
Yeah, this is a book about a ghost town, a dying town on the Colorado, the High Plains of Colorado. And it's a book that really it explores this town. So if as a reader, what you like is sort of to feel that you're there in a place, this is a book for you. But in addition to that, what's so wonderful about this book is that Bonnie Nadsom is just a terrific writer. And her language, I was just marking up sentences, marking up whole paragraphs because I was so taken with her writing. It's a book that has a little bit of magical realism. It has a little mystery in it, in the sense of not a whodunit, but what's really happening here. But it's about families, it's about friendship, it's about a young couple who have planned all their lives to go off to college together and spend the rest of their life together, and then things happen that make that plan not feasible. And Lions, it's called Lions because that's the name of the town. And the book is about the town. The town becomes really a separate character.
And you're also talking about young people in a town that has no future.
Yes, it definitely has no future. And here's one of her paragraphs where she talks about what happened to Lions. She says, "These days, everyone's gone. If you were to take an unmarked county road off of the highway and drive north an hour, if you could find the place, distinguishable by its high rusted water tower and abandoned sugar beet factory, you could stand in the middle of Jefferson Street and hear each note from each barn swallow floating through the air like a globe of silver, in the silence between, blood singing in your ears." Hmm. Now that's good writing.
Stand in the middle of the main street and you can, all the only thing you hear are birds chirping.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Bonnie Nadsom's Lions. My guest today is Nancy Pearl, our longtime book reviewer. We talk about some great summer reading options. And the next one, you know, I think earlier one of your books referred to, I think, Defectors. You said it's a mix of true life Cold War figures and invented characters in the spy thriller. The next book is set in Hollywood, and it's the same sort of thing with a mixture of fiction and real people, and that's Renee Patrick, Design for Dying.
Yeah, this is just the first book in what's going to be just a terrific series. The second book after Design for Dying, the second book is out called Dangerous to Know. It's written by a husband and wife who have chosen a pseudonym for their separate, from their lives, to write as a pseudonym, not to write as a husband and wife team. And the main character in this book is a young girl who comes to Hollywood in 1937 to become a star, to sit at the drugstore and have somebody discover her. And when her former roommate is murdered, is found dead, actually, and she's wearing a dress that the main character, Lillian Frost, realizes is stolen from Paramount because she recognizes the dress from a movie that she's seen, she decides she's going to find out who the killer is, and in the process of doing so, she joins forces with Edith Head, who was the head of costumes at the studio. So it's a book that has real people. The authors of this book are huge movie fans. If you have any interest, I think readers who have any interest or remember fondly movies of the 1930s, and it's going to move into the 1940s, I suspect, will just have a huge amount of fun reading these books.
I assume there's a variety of cameo appearances by various Hollywood luminaries of the time.
Yes, absolutely. And it's interesting because they based the relationship between Edith Head and Lillian Frost on kind of the way that Rex Stout wrote about Nero Wolfe, so that Nero Wolfe stayed home basically, and he had somebody who went out, Archie Goodwin, who went out and did all the detecting. Well, here Edith Head stays, in her workroom in her office at the studio, and Lillian Frost does all the legwork. So it's just a delight. It's really a lovely little mystery.
The pen name Renee Patrick and Design for Dying. Up next is a book by Nick Petrie, The Drifter.
So this also is the first of a series. This is a book that I think if you're a fan of Lee Child books, of his thrillers, then you'll really enjoy this, while acknowledging that Nick Petrie owes a great debt to Lee Child. So the main character in this book and the continuing character in this book is a guy named Peter Ash, who has left the military. He's ex-military, and he goes to visit the wife of one of the people that he served with, and by doing so, he really gets caught up in a lot of trouble and a lot of needing to protect his buddy's wife and family. If you're going to go on a trip, if you have a long airplane ride coming up, The Drifter is a great book for you.
All right, Nick Petrie's The Drifter. And it looks like a couple of books for younger readers. Drew Daywalt, The Legend of Rock, Paper, Scissors.
So
I assume this is about how rock, paper, scissors got started?
Yes. This is rock, paper, scissors is, you can find the same game in many countries. But this is the story of how it came to be in the United States. And it's a delight. What you're really looking for in children's books, because you'll want to read this out loud and your 6 to 9 year old or 5 to 8 year old will want to hear this over and over and over again. So this is a book that you need a book in that situation that you'll really enjoy reading again and again. And this is that book. It's very funny. It absolutely needs to be read aloud, and you need to try to read it as much as you can make this happen, as though you were announcing a motocross. And so it is, I mean, it's hard even to stop. And the pictures, which are done by a wonderful illustrator named Adam Rex, are just perfect. So it begins like this, and I'm not a good motocross announcer, but I'll try. Long ago, in an ancient and distant realm called the Kingdom of Backyard, there lived a warrior named Rock.
And
it's about these three, the Rock, Paper, and Scissors, all of whom are the undisputed champions of their particular neighborhood, and what happens when they get together.
Sounds like a lot of fun. That's Drew DeWalt's The Legend of Rock, Paper, Scissors. I assume it's a picture book?
It is a picture book, yes.
Finally, Kathleen Rooney's Lillian Boxfish Takes a Walk.
I love this book. And Lillian Boxfish is based on a real person, one of the very first people, women, to work in the advertising industry in New York, at Macy's, actually. She was head of advertising there for many years, the person upon whom this book is based. And it's a book that takes place over the course of about 24 hours. It's New Year's Eve. And Lillian Boxfish, who is, as I said, in her 80s, decides to take a walk and revisit places that meant a lot to her in her childhood and her adulthood. It's just wonderful. It's a wonderful cover, and it's it was one of my favorite books of this year. It's one of those books you just kind of want to hug.
And it's a sort of a elegiac novel in which she's recounting her life as she takes the walk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And so and it's all because it takes place in just these 24 hours, or really even less than that. And you just get this picture of a woman who tried and succeeded in making it in what was a man's profession. So if Mad Men. If you like Mad Men, and I was somewhat of a fan, not a huge fan, this book gives you kind of the distaff side of that.
All right. That's Kathleen Rooney's Lillian Boxfish Takes a Walk. You can get the full list at our website, Public Radio Tulsa. Nancy, as always, thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome, Rich.
Nancy Pearl is our longtime book reviewer here on Studio Tulsa. For a complete list of selections from today's talk, you can visit the Studio Tulsa section of our website, publicradiotulsa.org. By the way, Nancy is also the author of a forthcoming debut novel, George and Lizzie, a Novel, comes out in September, and she's expected to make an appearance here in Tulsa this fall. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.